Jeremiah says, "Woe to the shepherds who mislead and scatter the flocks of my pasture." The last few weeks we've heard about the role of the prophets. They were called to serve, to speak the word of God, even if it was unwelcome. And some were false prophets, some served only themselves, some failed to speak the word, and the flock was scattered because they were on the wrong path. They were not true shepherds, not true prophets of the Most High. Pope Benedict last week said much the same thing. In a homily delivered last week in Frascati in Italy, the Pope said, "This remains the mandate of the Church. She does not preach what the powerful want to hear. Her criterion is truth and justice, even if it garners no applause and collides with human power. The Church speaks with the voice of Christ. The Church calls us to what is noble, good, and true. But sadly, sometimes we don't listen. We're overwhelmed by the voices that come to us from the culture, from the media, from all sorts of other sources which dim and mute the voice of Christ coming to us from the Church. We are in an enormous culture war right now, devastating to faith, to family, and to our own personal lives. And in many ways, it's coming together as the perfect storm. It's caught Christians so much by surprise that instead of having a little bit of pushback against the culture, standing up on our own, standing for what is noble, good, and true, we've succumbed. We've been overwhelmed. In many ways, we've been boiled like a frog because we haven't listened fully to the voice of Christ coming to us from the Church, formed our lives according to it in order to take a stand. Remember what culture was like 50 years ago. Some of you are a little bit older like myself. You're able to look back a ways. Think of what television was like. If you go back 50 years, we find that there was Ed Sullivan, Maverick, Johnny Yuma the Rebel, Gunsmoke with Chuck Connors. All of those sorts of things were there. Now we're embarrassed to look at the list of channels and the programming, things like Wife Swap and things like that. It's embarrassing how far we've fallen, how much we've allowed to take place in our midst, and we seem to tolerate it pretty well. Oh, we justify. It's a secular society. We mustn't really make our judgments bear upon anyone else, and we tolerate evils around us altogether too well. What was our culture like 50 years ago? Marriages were strong. Divorce was only about 5%. Today it's 50%. Illegitimacy was low. Only at 5%. Today it's 40% nationwide, 74% in the black community. Devastating. It's wonderful when children are allowed to have a mother and a father assisting them to rise up and to raise up and to grow up. It's not impossible with a single parent family, but it's much harder, much more challenging, and we need to keep strong families. It's that important. Schools were safe. Teachers back then record that the biggest problem they had was smoking in the bathroom and kids chewing gum. A few years ago, they commented, the teachers in California, they said their biggest problem was kids smoking crack cocaine and bringing guns to school. Parents sided with teachers and with the police, not with their kids. Kids were made to work hard, act with respect, be civilized. Mass attendance was 70%. Today, it's 25 to 30%. Pornography was illegal, abortion unthinkable. And there was a work ethic. Kids wanted to work, wanted to get their first job, wanted to buy their first bicycle, wanted to buy their first car. There was no failure to launch. And we've come a long way in the last 50 years. An awful lot of societal decline has occurred along the way. And I think what we're facing is what I call the perfect storm. All kinds of evils have come about in our midst, and not by accident. The culture shift is not merely culture drifting. It's being subverted. And once you know that it's being subverted intentionally, then you get a little bit determined, a little bit, it's important that we understand the problem. It's important that we as Catholics learn our faith, embrace our faith, live our faith, and push back. It's important that we have a little bit of pushback in our lives, that we don't just get bowled over, don't just get boiled like a frog. It's that important that we stand up. Now, did you know there's one of the social thinkers of the last century, back in the 1930s and 40s? His name was Wilhelm Reich. Wilhelm Reich was a psychologist, died in 1957. Like Freud, Reich was obsessed with sex. He was an atheist. He hoped for a utopia, and all utopias are founded upon the notion of unlimited sex and freedom from the shackles of marriage. And he saw Christianity as the obstacle. Because Christianity teaches the only place for sex is in marriage between a husband and wife. All other people are called to refrain from sex, whether it's because you're young and single, whether you're old and widowed, whether you're divorced. All single people are to refrain from sex. It's foundational to the Christian teaching about morality. Not an option. This is core. This is bedrock. This is normative. It has been for 2,000 years. And if we've drifted from that, there's a problem. There's a challenge set before us. So Reich hated the Catholic Church and its teachings about the only place for sex being in marriage. He saw the disciplines of the nuclear family, one man and one woman united with their children, these disciplines further holding back sexual freedoms. But now here's the challenge. It goes a bit farther than that. He saw that there's a political aspect to sexuality. You and I go, really? What? Political side to it? Reich recognized that what was really happening here is he called this marriage and family morality as part of the framework of government. He recognized that and he rejected that. He wanted to have instead socialist and communist governments. He praised the Russian Revolution because it broke down the churches, broke down the families, and broke down morality. He wanted that to come about. He wanted to start from the top with the government coming down and breaking down the church and the family and morality. He actually proposed this. He wanted to see this come about. Stalin himself, after Lenin, Stalin himself reversed the course, needing stronger families because he saw the war coming with Germany. And he knew that without strong families, there would be no way they could resist the German onslaught. And so he resisted, and Reich was disappointed. But you as Catholics recognize there's something key to this. And in fact, we say the family is the fundamental cell of society. Family is the basis of economic prosperity. Keep your family together, you prosper. Single parenthood is a recipe for poverty. Did you know the greatest increase of poverty? We call it the feminization of poverty. It's because of single parenthood. And therefore, you and I are trying to keep families together. It's a recipe for economic success. It's one of the challenges. The family is the basis of self-government. If we can control our passions, if we can control our family, we don't need the government to step in and intervene. Our founding fathers knew this. If the family is intact, we want small, limited government. If the family is in disarray, we need the government to be large, powerful, to step in, to intervene in our lives, to take over for all of our own failures. Our founding fathers wanted a small government. Reich wanted the big government, wanted the government to become the nanny state and to grant us all of the financial favors and to give us all of our sexual liberties. That's what he foresaw. That's what he wanted. So in a certain way, there is a connection between sexuality and government. You and I want, we want all of this to be contained within the family with small government in the family. The family is the nucleus of all these good things. We want strong families, and that allows us to have limited government. There's actually a political dimension to all that we're talking about. We go on beyond that. Reich saw after the war, he wasn't going to get it very far with having just communist governments reign and bring down their freedoms that he wanted. Instead, he wanted to start from the inside, from the youth. And here's what he proposed. He said, we want the young people in particular to be sexually active and renounce the guilt of it. Notice, he wanted them to be sexually active and renounce the guilt. He says, if they're sexually active and they confess it, we have lost them to Christianity. It's very important insight on his part, and it's actually true. Even though he's an atheist, it was true. If young people become sexually active and renounce the guilt of it, it won't matter that they go to Catholic school, Catholic high school, religious ed, or anything else. They're living by another gospel. And so it's that important for us to, first of all, challenge sex education in our midst, to actually give Christian moral teaching to the young, to make it easier for them to confess their sins, to begin discipleship where we harness these deepest passions and bring them to the service of the gospel. That's Christianity. That's the life of the Christian, where we offer our bodies, as St. Paul says, as a living sacrifice. That's what it means to be a disciple. So Reich had some of these teachings. He was one undermining the culture. He was subverting the culture quite intentionally and provided an intellectual backdrop for what has happened, sadly, throughout much of academia. Another challenge is before us. The legal landscape was also undermined in this culture war which is going on. You recognize that since the 50s, the Supreme Court has struck down one after another of the obscenity laws, allowing pornography more and more to be prevalent in our midst. This is an enormous error to pretend that pornography is part of our First Amendment right to free speech. Free speech has to do with being able to speak against our own government and our own leaders. That's free speech. Pornography has nothing to do with that. Yet it's been in our midst with its corrupting influence, undermining men, undermining our families in so many ways. And you and I have somehow allowed it to be in our midst. And it's fundamentally changed our attitudes. We find the Supreme Court went farther than 1965. They rendered another decision called Griswold versus Connecticut, a decision legalizing the advertising and promotion of contraception. That was very important because it was the Protestants way back in the 1860s who had passed these laws limiting contraception. They knew that was going to be a problem with not only practice but attitudes. It was the Protestants who brought these laws to bear in our country after the Civil War. They needed to be struck down because immediately on the heels of that came the funding of Planned Parenthood by our Congress and giving us a thing called SECOOS. That was the acronym for sex education in the United States, setting the norms and standards for all the public schools throughout the country and undermining our youth, teaching them impurity, teaching them and promoting immorality, teaching them what Wilhelm Reich had already proposed, to get the young people to be sexually active and renounce the guilt of it. That's part of the culture war that we're living through right now. That's part of the undermining of the gospel way of life that we're living through right now. And sadly, it's time for us to begin to push back against, embrace the gospel morality, humble ourselves, make ourselves disciples of the Lord Jesus, full living members of the church. That's part of our mission. Obviously, you know the Supreme Court went even farther with Roe versus Wade, 1973, legalizing abortion. And while there's been 55 million of our own children who've died by abortion, really it's not about the baby. It's about defending a lifestyle. And the lifestyle is the fundamental culture change which is in our midst. So now notice in all of this, I am not trying to lay a guilt trip on anybody. I'm simply trying to make us aware there's a gigantic culture war in our midst. We are in the midst of the perfect storm. We need to be aware of that, understand its dimensions, its ramifications, and begin to think with the mind of the church, begin to listen so that we can understand what Christ is speaking to us through his church to be safeguarded, to safeguard ourselves, our families, ultimately our culture, from this tidal wave of culture change which undermines not just the family, but the nation itself. By the way, some of you might know a little bit of history. Perhaps you've heard some of the remarks of Plato, one of the Greek philosophers. And Plato remarks that the greatest excess of liberty will be followed by the greatest excess of totalitarianism. That's the way it turns. Once people have had liberty and liberty turns into license, the government has to sweep in with enormous powers in order to reclaim things. That's what's really in the balance. Mysteriously, our sexual lives do have an impact, not only on our personal life, but widely on the culture and ultimately on the government itself. If you want to have a free land, you have to govern yourself. If you want to have a free land, you need to have strong families, one man, one woman, united with your children. It's that important to the life of the nation, as well as to our own well-being. Now, that's the intellectual and the legal backdrop of this culture war. One more thing had to come in place for the sexual revolution to be kicked off in earnest. What was that one thing that happened in the 60s? That one thing that made the sexual revolution possible? You know the answer. It was the pill. The contraceptive pill made its appearance on the scene in 1960, was widely accepted, opened the doors to the sexual revolution, opened the doors to promiscuity, the idea that we could have all of these pleasures, not be caught or in any way impinged upon by pregnancy, that we could have all of these things, and we'd still have happy families, still have a strong country. Hasn't worked out that way. And that's one of the things which is before us. Since the sexual revolution began in the 60s, there's been a quantum increase in premarital sex, extramarital sex, pornography, AIDS, venereal disease, violent crimes, rape, and finally abortion. The degradation of women, women being used as objects for mere gratification, the undermining of the family. All of this is in our midst because of the sexual revolution. The very things that Wilhelm Reich wanted are now in our midst. And you and I have to ask ourselves, did it work? Are we happier? Is our land better? Did this utopian experiment for the last 40 years of unlimited sex, freedom from the shackles of marriage, has it made us happier? Has it made us more prosperous, productive as a nation? Is our society as strong? Are our morals as strong? Are our marriages as strong? Are our values being passed on to our kids? Are our streets safer to walk than they were in 1962? We've taken these pleasures, we've embraced this attitude which has come to us, and yet it hasn't worked out well at all for us. In fact, we find ourselves with enormous numbers of our young people being sexually active and having no remorse whatsoever. It's a challenge. And now we find that even the scholars are writing about it, saying we're now in the porn generation, addiction being rampant. And out of this comes violence, violence and deviancy. All of this is something that you and I have to face. It's something which is now part of our lives. It's part of our culture. It's in our midst. One of the great theologians passed away a few years ago. His name, Father John Hardin, gave a talk whose very title was frightening. He said, "Contraception, fatal to the faith." He wasn't far off, because those who embrace these lifestyles, these attitudes, these practices, end up drifting away from the church because its teachings are uncomfortable. They find themselves farther and farther from Christ. What are the effects of contraception upon marriage? Well, you know what Jesus says. He says when he's talking about marriage, he always goes back to the beginning. In the beginning, it was not that way. In the beginning, God made us in the image and likeness of God. In the beginning, God made us in a special way so the husband and wife should be joined, one man, one woman, in a union of all life and love. And he gave them one special act, the marital embrace, the act of sexual union. And that was the act by which they celebrated and renewed their union as husband and wife, the two becoming one. And we find there the scripture says, what God has joined, man must not divide. That's not just the union of husband and wife. It's the union of the marital act. And that one act says life and love at the same time. When we want to separate it by contraception, this is only about love. I don't want any life to flow from this. What happens is we begin to diminish love. When love and life are separated, both are corrupted. When love and life are separated, we begin to use one another. Pope John Paul says, to love means to give of yourself. Married love means to give your whole self, lifelong, faithful, open to new life. He says the opposite of to love someone is to use them. And even in marriage, it's possible to use a spouse. Even in marriage, it's possible. And what happens is love begins to dim. One woman spoke about this after getting off of contraception. She wrote a note to her husband. She said, if someone asked me, how's your love life? I'd say, beautiful, awesome, wonderful. But in the past, I wasn't always able to say that. When we used contraceptives, the first few years of our marriage, I felt an emptiness. Something was missing. I felt used. Remember when I would share with you how I couldn't feel close to you, but I didn't know why I felt that way? That's what contraception does. It looks like love, but it's not. Remember when Jesus gives that story about having sown a field of wheat? But an enemy comes at night and sowed cockle in the field. And he says, I see an enemy's hand in this. Cockle looks like wheat, but you can't eat it. It looks like the real deal, but it's not. Contraception looks like love, but it's not. And it wounds the love, undermines the marriage, undermines the union. And out of that, we end up with an attitude. We call it the contraceptive attitude, which expects certain pleasures, certain comforts, takes delight in certain shows that are on TV, tolerates a certain immorality. It undermines our whole attitudes. We become boiled like the frog. It undermines all that we stand for. And after couples have had the number of children they so desire, sterilization becomes the preferred option. And I know that the nurses and doctors in hospitals very often pressure the women for sterilization while they're still in the hospital, still in a vulnerable mode. And it's a tragedy. I know one couple that's had a reversal. A number of couples, in fact, I know, but one in particular. The husband was an attorney, and he was wrestling with this sterilization that they had had. And he said, I realized we had taken away God's rights over our marriage. There's a thought. That God would have rights over us. Since God is the origin of life and love, God is the origin of this love that we share, how can we exclude God from our life and love? I had taken away God's rights over our marriage. That God would have the right to raise up a child. That God would have the right to raise up someone to cure AIDS. That I had taken away God's rights over my family. And they had a reversal. They've got three more kids after that reversal. They had three, they got three more. And the first of those, the second three, is by the sweet name of Bernadette. And I still call her Miss B to this day. She's a real sweetie. In all of this, we've become swept along by a secular culture. In a giant culture war, the perfect storm, we've been swept along. Now notice in all of this, I'm not trying to lay a guilt trip on anybody. This is to take stock of where we are. It took us 50 years to get into this mess. It's going to take us a while to get out of it. But we need to take stock of where we are. We need to see where do we have to begin to push back. Now you know the church proposes a wonderful teaching on human sexuality. Its anniversary is coming up now, July 25th, 1968. That was the anniversary of Humanae Vitae on human life. and much neglected in the spirit of the times, the church warned us, if we embraced contraception, we're not only going to face divorce, but abortion, ultimately the degradation of women, the lowering of societal morals, and ultimately euthanasia. All of that's come to pass. All of that's in our midst. And so we need to go back and examine, what is it that the church has said? It's taught us that contraception was wrong, dishonest, looks like love, but it isn't. It's cockle compared to wheat. The Catholic Church proposes natural family planning, and this is Natural Family Planning Awareness Week. It's scientific knowledge about our fertility exactly as we are day to day. Most couples are fertile for only about 7 or 8 days per cycle, and they can know when they are in order to achieve a pregnancy or to avoid a pregnancy. Yes, there are sacrifices to avoid conjugal union at certain times when we might not want to conceive, but there's also great rewards of intimacy, the experience of love and of being loved. Let me extend the message just a little bit. You know, there's a little bit of rebellion, perhaps in all of us. Sometimes we can make good use of it. Have you ever heard that the reason the Irish are Catholic is because somebody told them they couldn't be? It was the Brits who opposed them all along, and they dug in deeper on their faith because they were opposed to the Brits. But in Poland, it was Pope John Paul in the Diocese of Krakow. While he was bishop there, he had every single parish in the diocese had a natural family planning clinic. And every single family that was married, every couple that was married, they took natural family planning. Because what it does is it seals the union of husband and wife. It seals them together so that the family becomes the nucleus of society. It strengthens the family over and against the all-powerful state. And it was on the basis of that rebellion by which they claimed their faith, claimed their union, claimed their love, that they resisted the onslaught of communism. And in that resistance, now have freedom and have extended that freedom to the world. So it's that critical. It not only has personal consequences, spiritual consequences, social consequences, but even the political. If you want to rebel, let's rebel against this secular culture. That's what we need to do. Again, this is not about a guilt trip. It's not about saying anybody's is doing. It's simply to say, let's take a look at where we are today. So what I want you to do is this. First of all, I want you to pray. Talk to God about the things that you've heard today. Could Jesus and his church really have been right all along? Could we really be that far off course? It's important to think. Next, I want you to study and to read, perhaps to read the Theology of the Body, Humanae Vitae, Familiaris Consortio. You'll find an information table out in the foyer here with a lot of information, good people to talk to. If you're still in those childbearing years, take the natural family planning class. We ask that of all the young couples getting married. It's a good thing for all of us to understand and to share that, to keep love and life together. Again, I don't treat this as a guilt trip. Don't think of it that way. Again, it took us 50 years to get into this mess. It's going to take a while to get out of it. This is meant to be an honest moment, a thought-provoking moment, a time to look at our lives, look at our culture, see how we're really doing, and reclaim this as a Christian culture.